and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I was actually asking Michelle Salzman on the phone right before we got on. I said, what song do you want? And she said, pick something that'll make me laugh. Working nine to five. And PJ picked this out without consulting with me, which is perfect. Like, I forgot about it, and he did a great job. So well done. Michelle Salzman, she is our state representative for District 1 in the Tallahassee Legislature. Michelle, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Did we pick one to make you laugh all day?
Like, first of all, it's cute. 9 to 5, really?
Right.
It's more like that, 5 a.m. to like 11:30, 12 at night.
I'm familiar with that schedule.
You know, it just depends, but.
Yeah, I hear all these people talking about a 40 or a 50-hour work week. I mean, I would love to have just a 60-hour work week, but, you know, we love what we do, so you do it, right?
That's exactly right.
I just want to make sure we get this out there before we get into your bills, because I will forget otherwise. You have a food distribution coming up March 15th, is that right?
Well, now that we've determined that, yes, it's March 15th. It's at Jubilee Church. Come on out. Anybody is welcome to get the food. It is fresh food, fresh meat, fresh vegetables. All the good stuff, a week's worth of groceries. We usually give it out to at least about 500 families. So come on out. It doesn't matter where you live or what your status is. There's no questions asked. We give everybody the food.
I think it's wonderful. And that's going to be at Jubilee Church on W Street. That's on March 15th, starting at 7:30 a.m. Until the food is gone, do be aware that people get in line really early. I mean, really early, like, you know, 2, 3, 1 a.m., that kind of thing. So, but no, it's a great thing, and you guys do that a bunch. All right, let's get into some of your bills, because you have a bunch of them filed, and, you know, session starts on Tuesday, and some of these are very interesting. You and I actually have talked quite a bit offline and some online on the radio about driver's license education requirements, HB 889. I read through this one, and I wasn't quite clear what it would end up doing, because it seemed to make it say that only people 18 and up would have to go through a driver's ed course, and that seemed to be a reduction of the requirements, but I know that's not the thing. So what is your bill actually going to do?
So the first paragraph is misleading, because it's the first paragraph, and it says it's the drug and alcohol course. So whenever you get a driver's license in the state of Florida, it doesn't matter how old you are, you must take the drug and alcohol class. It's like a 2-hour thing.
Got it.
So that had to be stated separately. That's what that is. Now, what we are requiring in that bill is if you are between the ages of 15 and 18, you must take one driver's ed classroom course. So we didn't do the lab component. This is a test.
That's the driving component out on the street, right?
Yep. Yeah. But make no mistake, it is my ultimate goal, and everybody is aware of that. But this is a step in the right direction. This bill would require these kids to have the half of the driver's ed course that you would take in school, because the other half would be the lab. And then we can take this data over the next couple of years and really look at it and say, okay, how many kids are now getting a driver's license in each district, because each district is different. And what would the fiscal implication look like if we tried to expand it to the lab portion? Because that's really what we want to do. One thing we will probably modify is the effective date, which will probably end up being next year, to give school districts an opportunity, if they want to opt in and be the main source of where these kids go. It'll give them the time to create the curriculum and find the teachers that can teach the classes. So right now, the way it stands, it's not in Department of Education statute. It's all related to DOT, Department of Transportation and Highway Safety. So there is not going to be any changes to any school district at all. But if school districts would like to do that, if they want to be the main component of it, then it'll give them an opportunity to do so. You have kids with bright futures and whatnot. They can't take a driver's ed course that messes with their GPA. So we can't put it in the DOE curriculum without really creating some spicy stuff. So the easiest way was to put it in the Department of Transportation and just leave the education component alone.
Yeah, and you and I had talked about this after, you know, I'd kind of discovered, I did not know that we had schools that were not teaching driver's ed, or that kids were going to take their driver's license without having had a driver's ed course and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you had, I think, had already been kind of working on this, but in any case, working on it more and trying to get us to a place where we have better and particularly hands-on eventually education practice for people getting their driver's license. You've got a bill, HB 743, social media use by minors. seems primarily geared towards giving parents access so that they can do their proper role of being guardian protector of their kids on social media. Is that right?
It seems that way. I looked at some of the online comments and we're, we can't help but to wonder what's going on in the world today. But the idea of the bill is to require social media platforms parental access to the private messaging. Currently, a lot of them encrypt their messages, and so you can't see what these kids are saying. What if a kid goes missing? What if there's a police investigation? Even law enforcement can't see it immediately. They have to do a subpoena. So all of this stuff is really just to open it up and create a safer environment for kids and families.
I love it. I mean, look, parents ought to have access to that without having to go through, you know, any problem. Look, you know, when you and I were growing up, if I was on the phone with some girl or a friend or whatever, and mom wanted to pick up another phone line somewhere in the house, she could. And that's all this is to me.
Oh, yeah.
That's all this is giving parents the ability to do what parents should be able to do, which is to protect their kids and, you know, monitor if they want to what their kids are doing online, which is a good thing. You also, and we've talked about this a bunch with law enforcement, but you also have, I think, finally, and thank goodness, but, you know, pushing to get the minimum age for firearm purchase or transfer down to 18. Of course, post Parkland, it was moved up to 21 for shotguns and long barrels. I've asked both sheriffs. Of course, they're on board. I'm a huge fan. I would rather have the 19-year-old girl on the college campus be able to buy a handgun rather than a shotgun, but that's a federal law. Do you think this law can actually pass? Yes. Can this actually pass the Senate? Because that's been the hang-up.
I have been guided to believe that we are in better posture to get it passed this time.
Okay.
You never know what's going to happen at the end moment.
Yeah.
You know, at the final hour, there's a lot of wheeling and dealing. House doesn't agree with one thing the Senate does and vice versa. And there's thousands of bills that come through the chamber. So right now, it is my impression that the bill will pass the Senate chamber and that we will get it on the governor's desk. But I also thought term limits was going to pass the Senate chamber last year, and it did not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that really blew my mind. That blew a lot of people's minds. The governor, everybody was shocked, but it's fine. We brought it back in a different way this year. We're going to just put it in the Constitution. But so while I say that I believe it'll pass, I just have to put that caveat in there because last year, you know, the prime example, the term limits, there, I could not believe it. I just could not believe that we couldn't get something so simple as that passed. It's like an 80% approval rating in the state of Florida. Why would you not want term limits? But it's fine. So we're hopeful that it will move. I think it will only have two committee stops in the House. I haven't looked at its reference, but it'll be quick and painless over in the House side of it. Tyler Soroy, he's the majority leader. He prime-coded it with me. He's really excited to see it get across the finish line. His sheriff is Grady Judd. So
perfect.
he's all about it. We talked about fixing some red flag laws, like making them a little bit more palatable and this and that. And I was like, Tyler, if you put a red flag law bill up on the rostrum, I have to vote no on it. I don't care if it's progress. I don't believe in red flag laws. So it would be bad. And I can imagine a lot of our other Republican friends would feel the same way. So we talked about the red flag law conversation. We also talked about the open carry conversation. I'm a huge open carry proponent, but the Senate will not move that either. So, you know, so just having these conversations and understanding, you know, where the Senate lies and other things, I really feel like the 21 to 18 legislation should have no problem because it's really the only one we've all agreed that we all can do together. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. And Randy Fine, I think his sponsor has put in a bill to allow campus carry for college students, which I completely support. I think it's likely to die a very quick death in the Senate, unfortunately. But I, you know, I'm hopeful for that one as well. We're talking to Michelle Salzman, our state representative for District 1. You mentioned it a moment ago, but you did file HJR. We're talking to Michelle Salzman, state rep for District 1, which is the north, really like 90% of the land, but, you know, 2/3 or so of Escambia County, basically. But, you know, as she likes to say, it's an hour to drive her district north to south, which is true. It's crazy. But you have filed HJR 679. That's going to be for a joint resolution to put a ballot initiative on the vote in 2026 term limits of 8 years for county commissioners and school district boards. It's now 12 years for school districts, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And this would be, it would not include current service, but when it goes into effect, they'd have 8 years after that and have to get out, right?
Correct. I don't like doing anything retroactive. I feel like whenever you put a retroactive language in any bill, it looks like you're trying to go after somebody. And I mean, I love my commissioners. I love all of our local government officials. I work very well with them. This isn't anything about them at all. So it is a joint resolution. It will put it on the ballot for 2026 when a lot of conservatives will be out voting for the governor and other major offices. So it's a good time to put it on there. And it just codifies it in the Constitution. We went back and forth and said, should we just file the bill again the way it was last year and do 8 years? And we thought, well, worst case, we can land on a joint resolution. But the way that the bills are written, you can't change it to a resolution after you've done just a regular law. So we decided just to go with the resolution. Yeah. So the resolution, everybody, the only pushback I got last year when I was talking to folks in the chamber was the fact that they were like, we want the people to just vote for it. Can the people vote for it? Can the people vote for it? And so we're like, you know what? What are we afraid of? The people will vote for it. So putting it on the ballot is just the best thing. And then, you know, if it doesn't pass, then we know that we were wrong. But it's my feeling that that'll be one of the highest pass rates of all of the amendments that'll be put on the ballot.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that that conversation in a year and a half. You've also got one here on higher education, HB 1321. But if I understand it properly, this is actually a pretty significant bill and might be part of the, let's just say, lower level of harmony in Tallahassee between the governor's office and the legislature. What does this bill do?
This bill is actually, you know, I believe the governor is going to be on board with it. I spoke with the governor's staff and he seemed, you know, he's like, oh, okay, all right, cool, all right, we'll look at all this. And it's pretty spicy stuff, though, if you look in there. The Board of Governors is who appoints the folks all around, you know, for the university system. And I really don't know any of those cats, but when the speaker was like, hey, we got this bill, and I'm like, okay. And he said, well, it might make some folks, you know, some important people might get upset. And I was like, well, do they pay my mortgage? I don't. Who's important? That's a perspective, you know. And so it's a lot of very powerful people from what I hear. But basically, it'll create some guardrails around the Board of Governors. Right now, you know, 2 years ago, we passed, or might have been 3 years ago, we passed a bill that allowed people to apply to be a president of a university in the state of Florida in the shade. So the applications weren't made public. And we did that, you know, the thought process was we didn't want people to lose their jobs for applying for, you know, such a position. And we really wanted to give people an opportunity to feel like they could apply without being in the spotlight, because those things make headlines when you apply. So we did that. But then the Board of Governors came back later and said, you know, we're going to make these votes in the shade. So now everything's done in the dark of night, and so the people of the state of Florida, the citizens, the ones that pay the taxes, they have no idea of any of the process. And the education system is the second largest part of Florida's budget, coming in at almost $40 billion annually. I mean, that's a massive amount of money to make such big decisions in the dark of the night. So the idea is just to create some transparency in government across the bureaucracy, not just through, you know, the constitutional officers. And it's a consistent message. It creates the requirement to do financial disclosures, which that's going to be the sticking point, right? A lot of these wealthy people, they don't want us to know everything about their finances. I understand that. It creates term limits. Right now, you can be on the Board of Governors as many times as you want. It will put guardrails in place as to how many times you can be president or chairman or whatever that terminology is specifically, you know, the leader of the board says you can only do it one time. It also opens up the syllabus requirements in some of these private schools in higher education. They're not disclosing, you know, the textbooks and things like that until you're already in the school and the syllabus aren't being published. And so we created some transparency in that too, but it's going to be pretty hairy. I'm up for the fight. It's really about creating transparency in the process of, you know, our higher education system.
Well, we'll wait for the conversation on that. Certainly here locally, we have directly seen the impact that the Board of Governors can have on, on things related to our cherished university. So we'll see. Michelle Salzman, she's a state representative for District 1. That's the northern, about two-thirds, three-quarters of Escambia County. The food distribution, again, is going to be at Jubilee Church at 7:30 a.m. on March 15th, but get there earlier than that. The Ides of March bode well for those who get there early. Michelle, as always, thank you so much for the time, for what you're doing, and we'll talk to you again soon. Have a great week next week at session.
Thanks. Take care.